Today we start the part of Keith Montgomery's trial that gets into the linguistic lie detection method of statement analysis. This was one component of the trial I really wanted to include. This kind of analysis has long been an interest of mine. For years I've been reading blogs, analyzing true crime statements, and eventually becoming certified myself. For fun. I was curious when examining this deception technique whether it could ever be applied to cases of he said, she said. Whether it could offer us clarity. Getting it into evidence in the Keith Montgomery trial proved trickier than I thought. I chased my tail for a while until Jessa Nicholson Getz stepped in gracefully to conceive a method for allowing this typically inadmissible evidence into trial. This episode illustrates how we did that. The next few episodes will be breaking down statement analysis, what it means and how it's applied. And I'll be curious to know what you all think. So, thank you, and I hope you enjoy the episode. When one person's word is pitted against another's, how do we exact justice? Keith Montgomery stands trial in the sexual battery of Riley Page. With limited physical evidence, a new form of lie detection, and an investigation under investigation, the Montgomery jury must determine if the truth lies with the victim or the defendant. Arguments have concluded and deliberations are in progress. In January of 2017, an internal memo was sent from the Leon County Sheriff to all deputies. Joanna Spitz is a Leon County Sheriff's deputy who was called to speak to its authenticity and read the memo aloud in court.
Internal memo from Leon County Sheriff Davis, January 2017, subject sexual battery convictions. Despite recent efforts, in Q4 of 2016, Leon County's conviction rates for sexual battery offenses remained stagnant. It remains below the national average despite increased budgetary allocation and rising concern within the community. Once again, I urge all deputies to remain diligent in their investigative work regarding every complaint relating to sexual battery and to work closely and cooperatively with the DA's office until convictions are secured. Thank you. Danita M. Davis, Leon County Sheriff.
After laying the groundwork to showcase an incentivized investigation, the defense called its next witness.
Detective Suarez, S-U-A-R-E-Z. I was the lead investigator on the Page case.
Thank you, Detective. After receiving Ms. Page's claim against Keith Montgomery, what were your immediate next steps?
It was incumbent upon us to speak with Mr. Montgomery as quickly as possible. On the day Ms. Page reported her battery, I called Mr. Montgomery's cell phone. I left a voicemail at approximately 3:30 p.m. At 8 p.m. when I hadn't heard back, I called Mr. Montgomery a second time. He answered that call and agreed to come down to the office the following day, April 24th, to speak with us.
Did you inform Mr. Montgomery there has been a charge of sexual battery made against him?
Not at that time. I informed Mr. Montgomery that a matter had been brought to our attention and we wanted him to come to the sheriff's office and clear up a few things for us.
I see. And the following day, did Keith arrive to the sheriff's office on time?
Yes, he did.
And you interviewed him personally, is that correct?
That's correct.
Was this interview recorded?
Yes, it was.
How did you approach this interview?
I began the interview by telling Mr. Montgomery we'd received a report that concerned us regarding his conduct with Riley Page on the night of April 19th, so I asked him to walk me through what happened.
It was Thursday afternoon, and I got a text from my girlfriend, Lila, asking me to meet her for a coffee. She said we needed to talk. I met her at the coffee shop on Colonial Ave, around 3. Before getting coffee, she told me she cheated on me the night before Eric. Eric is the guy she has a kid with. I was angry, understandably, but I'm not the kind of guy who makes things worse by yelling, being irrational. I left her. While I was walking around, I went to pick up a bottle of whiskey and I went to Riley's. Riley was a good friend. I texted some folks, but I didn't make plans. I went to Riley's and brought the bottle because I thought we could have a drink. I just wanted to see a good friend. I got to Riley's, and she invited me in and was very nice. She poured us some drinks, maybe three, and was really warm and started coming on to me. She thought now that this had happened with Lila, she and I could be together. So we're on the couch and she's flirting with me and basically wants to start things up. She starts coming on to me, and, you know, Riley and I always had a good time, being so nice and everything. When she grabbed me and kissed me, I'm concerned because I don't know how this will impact things with Lila, but she wants it, so, you know, we hook up. I just really wanted to have a nice time with her. I actually think we had a really nice time. I left a note on her car the next day, asking her not to tell people about our hookup. I didn't want to screw things up with Lila, and that didn't make me look good. I honestly thought you'd understand. I really thought everything was cool, so I just left the note to make sure, and that was it.
Okay, Keith's statement. Do you believe it? I mean, what do you think of him and all that?
I found it very confusing. It was so at odds with what Riley had said. And it just, he was just so casual about it. It almost seemed a little guarded. It just seemed unbelievable considering the accusations leveled against him.
I find it interesting that he considered her a really good friend.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He kept saying
well,
that.
Well, she's a really good friend, so... That's why I went to go see her. I mean,
why haven't you talked to her or responded to her in months?
And there were several calls to other people that weren't around, so she wasn't first choice, second choice, third choice, maybe not even fourth choice. Maybe she was just the only one that was around in that moment where he really couldn't be alone.
His definition of really good friend may be different from your idea of a really good friend.
Seems like it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then, I thought he sounded calm, cool, and collected. I feel like he had his story straight. I feel like in his mind, I don't know, I don't recall whether or not he knew he was under investigation for a rape at the time. I don't think
he didn't know.
And so I feel like
there were questions about his conduct.
Question about his conduct. And I
he
feel
seemed
like,
very, calm and collected.
He showed
and
up on time.
You'd think if he were making it up on the spot, he would be stammering a little bit more or stuttering or something.
I took
or if it
note
wasn't
of
the
him
truth,
being,
you mean.
Saying, I just thought we had a nice time. I thought we had a nice time. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've sensed some nerves there and some...
He was very vague about certain details, but another one detail he was sort of specific about, which I thought was strange, was he said that, I just want to be friends, but you know we were on the couch and you know she really wanted it, so I was like, oh okay, like I don't really have a choice. He just made himself sound like he was completely powerless,
so passive in that.
Yeah,
I think he was just saying the opportunity arose, and so he's like, okay, if this is what you want to do, I don't feel good about myself right now.
Well,
why
then
not?
He didn't have to do it.
Well, yeah, but that's the way he's describing it is...
He makes it sound like he didn't want it at all, but, I can't do anything. Oh, mm-hmm.
I didn't get that at all. I feel like he was just like, oh, okay, so this is going
to
happen.
Yeah. No, I got that for sure, especially he said he brought over the... I just happened to get this whiskey.
Yeah.
Brought it over, but she poured us three drinks, and then she really wanted it. So.
Yeah.
But it's like, you brought the whiskey.
Yeah,
he made
and
it
you
seem
showed
like
up
she orchestrated this plan when really he's
the
one.
It seems, I mean, you'd think if he were making it up on the spot, it wouldn't come out so smooth.
And, yeah.
Well, maybe he's a smooth operator. I don't know.
He's had a lot of training.
Did you think it sounded rehearsed?
I think it sounded almost very relaxed. Like, I don't want to say too relaxed, but I think, like, if I were to describe what I would do to my day, whether or not it was... up for investigation, I feel like that's how I would sound.
I don't think whether or not someone sounds relaxed is a good indicator of whether or not they're lying.
I
think it massively depends on the person, the situation in which you're asking the questions. Was this in person or this was a telephone?
In person.
He had time to prepare.
Yeah.
The appointment was set the night before for the following day.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
He had time to get his story straight, write down notes, memorize them, and go in there with a plan. Unlike Riley, where she was caught completely off guard, dragged into the police station by the help of her friend who helped helped her, right. and just, you know, still all the information 3 days obviously later swirling around in her head right. and traumatized.
Did they for sure say it was about the incident with Riley Page, or was it just an incident?
Well, since they were asking him about that incident, he probably knew that it was about that incident. But even
if,
I don't know.
Even if he hadn't been formally accused, if he's being called in for something like that, he knows that this, and if
serious.
He did do,
you're
yeah, it's serious.
It serious.
Yeah, he's gonna give a little think about what he's gonna talk about.
It's like, what could
day.
This be? It's like, yeah, come on, you think about minor things. You know, oh, this person wants to talk to me. The police want to talk
yeah.
to you. You know, you're getting brought in. You're going to go through everything in your head and paint yourself in the best light.
Or maybe he just didn't do anything, or they saw that night very, very differently, which we just discussed about how people perceive things.
I think that's what I find so disturbing about it, is that it was so different, their accounts of the night. Maybe if there was a little bit more of, yeah, you know, it got kind of weird or something, but he was spinning... I say spinning. I don't know if he was lying or telling the truth, but his narrative was so different from Riley's. Mm-hmm. And he didn't mention, he'd mentioned the note, but he didn't mention that he'd apologized in that note. He said, I'm sorry about last night. Please don't tell anyone. Well, if the account he gave was true, then what did he have to be sorry about?
And he only...
It could be that he's sorry that it did happen and he was concerned about life. Yeah. That is possible. It does seem like... It's not for sure that, because it's vague and ambiguous. Because it could be that.
Again, I don't think someone would be that stupid to put a note after something that big to say I'm sorry.
But like, did he know it was
please
big,
don't
though?
Say any, yeah.
yeah.
And that's what makes me believe that was just like, I'm sorry this happened. I didn't mean for it to.
Yeah.
You
if
know.
I sexually assaulted something, I wouldn't leave a note
exactly.
and be like, hey, don't tell anybody about that.
Right.
You probably want to look them in.
But it was.
He didn't mention though in his statement that it also said he was sorry.
Yeah. Right.
He only mentioned that it was saying. Don't tell anyone, and why he was saying don't tell anyone.
Yeah.
And if you want to make sure someone's not telling anyone, why only leave a note? Why not also talk to that person? And we can remember that she called him and left a message, and he didn't return any of her calls.
Yeah.
And so he was not communicating with her afterwards. Are you okay? I want to make sure you don't tell anyone. Mm. There was no additional communication. It was that note. And then that's it.
Maybe that shows that he didn't think it was that big of a deal.
Well, it's definitely not how you treat a good friend.
A really good friend.
Yeah.
Sure is not.
But also, like, you got to give him, like, when we were talking about Riley, and she left out a lot of stuff in her statement, I don't feel like you guys are scrutinizing her as much as you're scrutinizing him.
What do you mean by left out a lot of
stuff? When she, like, forgot the thing about the chest, about how she left that. So you're scrutinizing the fact that he didn't say he was sorry. If anything, that would make him look in a better light.
Well, we don't have to... different incidents to compare with Riley. We had her actually having the medical examination and what she said there versus her other statement.
When she's stripped naked.
If we had two statements from him, I'm sure there would be discrepancies, and especially if we got him naked and started probing around.
Yeah, I don't think they're exactly comparable situations.
Which, again, puts her in a very different light. So you have to think, like, even though we have to go off what we have. We don't have two statements.
Well,
that's very true.
Well,
but you guys aren't scrutinizing the fact that she also left out a lot of stuff. She had conflicting statements. So to scrutinize him to the point where it's like the kid doesn't stand a chance in my eyes, because it's just like, if we're going to scrutinize him to a T, we also have to scrutinize her to a T.
Well, there's information missing, you know, from both individuals. The thing that just concerns me more than anything is the fact that they're statements about the events of that night. And of course there are details that are left out, especially if alcohol was involved. But even then, the descriptions of it are so different. Their accounts are so different. Like, there is some falsehood here.
Yeah, it's eyebrow raising.
Yeah,
sure.
Or it could just be two different perceptions of a story. My husband and I have that all the time, where I'm just like, I thought you thought this, and he's like,
where
no, I thought
this. Where one thinks it's rape and the other one thinks you're great friends and had a good time?
No. But I mean,
that's so extreme.
Sexually, like, there's been instances where I'm just like, you know what? It's not like I would never not... It wasn't that like a rape situation, but it's just the difference where we were talking about, the difference between men and women, the way they perceive things.
But I think we have to come to an agreement that forced sexual battery...
Yes.
...is not able to be misconstrued by two participants.
Sure. Yes.
Okay.
actually making it to a yoga class can add more stress than it's supposed to relieve. Parking, toting your mat to a place on a packed floor, and the worst, for me, just feeling really conspicuous in that environment. Particularly if it's been a while and I'm about as flexible as an uncooked noodle. Yoga Glow, which is spelled Yoga G-L-O, is online yoga and meditation you can do anywhere you have a device. They have thousands of classes, renowned teachers, designed programs, and you have unlimited access to everything for $18 a month, which is less than one yoga class. I've started a morning wake-up yoga program, and I've been doing meditation classes that I choose day by day, depending on how I'm feeling, and I think they're really helping. I love their collections. Every class length you could want, every skill level, every focus, be it physical or mental. Yoga Glow is really user-friendly, and the content is so professionally laid out and intuitive. I am liking Yoga Glow a lot. Stop struggling to make that time and effort commitment to the studio and choose a resource that works for you. From your bed, from work, from anywhere you have a minute and a device. Get your first 2 weeks of Yoga Glow free when you sign up on yogaglow.com/deliberations. That's yogaglow.com/deliberations for 2 weeks free. yogaglow.com/deliberations.
Detective, what did you do with Key's statement after you received it?
I transcribed the statement, wrote out my notes, and logged the recording and written documentation into evidence.
Did you analyze Key's statement in any way?
Yes, I conducted statement analysis.
Statement analysis. What is statement analysis?
It's the science of analyzing a person's language to determine if they're being truthful or withholding information.
Like a lie detector?
Yes.
I've never heard of statement analysis. Does the Leon County Sheriff's Office employ statement analysis in all of its investigations?
No, not to my knowledge. It's a tool I use in my own investigative work.
Are you trained in statement analysis?
Yes.
Did you receive this training through the sheriff's office?
No, I took the course of my own accord.
One course?
Yes.
In person?
Online.
So, let me see if I understand. You took an online course of your own accord and then applied those teachings to your professional investigative work with the sheriff's office.
That's correct.
Detective, what organization did you take this training through?
It's a highly reputable company called Veracity Training, Inc. that trains law enforcement officials as well as citizens in a variety of lie detection techniques, among them statement analysis.
Who designed the curriculum you studied?
A former FBI interrogation consultant.
The FBI employed him to understand best practices for interrogations?
Correct.
Did you inform the Leon County Sheriff's Office that you were studying this type of analysis?
Yes, they thought it was commendable.
Have you ever studied other best practices for law enforcement that weren't necessarily available to you through the Sheriff's Office?
Yes, I think it's incumbent upon all of us to learn as much as we can, wherever we can. My training didn't end when I left the academy. I don't stop learning when I clock out at night. Learning best practices for my investigative work is something I've committed myself to doing since I was an officer. My application of these practices is what's helped me rise through the ranks as quickly as I have. The methods I learned enhance the effectiveness of my investigations.
Including statement analysis?
Yes.
Detective, how many hours was the online course?
8.
Thank you.
Before trial began, the defense filed a motion to preserve and protect all investigator notes. The statement analysis that Detective Suarez conducted was among these. There were 3 words that appeared at the end of the analysis.
Possible deception indicated.
So the analysis you conducted on my client's statement led you to believe he was being deceptive?
Possibly. Deceptive.
I see, much better.
Objection.
Withdrawn, Detective. Did your conclusion that Keith was being possibly deceptive guide your investigation?
I would say that everything I learned and analyzed informed my investigation. That's how I work.
Including the conclusion possible deception indicated?
Yes.
The defense called an expert in police investigation.
Garbage in, Garbage out is a term we use to explain how questionable or flawed evidence produces inaccurate results. The sanctity of the evidence an investigator considers cannot be overemphasized. If an investigator receives false information, from the point that information is received, the investigation is compromised.
What are some examples of false information?
Lies or inaccurate recollection from an eyewitness, inaccurate phone records or contaminated DNA evidence. Basically, anything in an investigation that corrupts the investigator's unbiased, factually based perspective.
Would an inaccurate scientific analysis on the defendant's statement qualify as false information?
Yes.
Would analysis with a largely untested, legally unsanctioned social science qualify as false information?
Yes. If an investigator relies on a questionable science to form a conclusion about the defendant, the term garbage in applies. His findings can't be trusted.
If a scientific analysis is conducted during the course of an investigation, would you suggest a high level of training or expertise be required of the analyst?
Of course. Above all, investigators need to conduct precise investigations. No guesswork, no risks, precision above all.
Dr. Sarah Beth Ward, W-A-R-D. I'm a psychiatrist and professor at the University of Florida State.
Great. Dr. Ward, can you please explain what is confirmational bias?
Confirmation bias is the tendency to search for, recall, and consider information in a way that favors a person's pre-existing opinion.
Is this a common phenomenon?
Everybody is guilty of confirmation bias. It's a human condition. Repeated experiments have found that we all process information in a way that favors our hypotheses. We want to be right.
In your professional opinion, if person A forms a hypothesis about person B's capacity for deception, what would person A's information gathering reflect from that point on?
From that point on, person A would process information in a way that corroborates his hypothesis that person B is deceptive.
So we have an internal memo from Leon County Sheriff's Office.
Well, that seems like that is, it would bias them a little bit. I mean that seems like, yeah. They're saying we need more
convictions.
Sexual assault convictions. Mm-hmm. That you'd think that it's got to be in the back of their mind then, if everyone's out. I would think that's obvious.
Yeah, that's understandable that they would want that, especially if they were below the national average. But the methods in which they go about raising that conviction rate, I think, is what's a little dubious. This Detective Suarez, she was implementing a technique off the books, basically, or off the work record. She went on. Learned this
ITT technical
in a whole full day of an online course.
I see the memo as previously, when it's a situation of he said she said without evidence, maybe they look at it as a way where, like, oh, we need to pass on this one and we can't bother with this one because we don't have a chance of charging and convicting. And I think that the memo is asking to maybe take that risk more with moving forward on situations that maybe they wouldn't have said yes to because they don't have enough to move forward.
Although I feel like you're kind of writing the memo for them, and like that sounds better than what was actually in the memo.
Yeah. The way the memo was written was
maybe work for the Leon County Sheriff Department.
but if they're concerned with conviction rates, wouldn't just not trying as many cases also bring that up?
But that would lead to a whole range of other problems. Yeah. I mean, someone comes to you with an accusation. No, sorry, we can't risk
trial because there's no evidence. We want to raise our convictions, and there's not enough evidence here, so we're not going to even take this case.
But can you turn away a formal complaint of rape or sexual assault on those grounds?
No, you can. You can ignore it. Wow. You can have someone who comes forward, and you can just say, there's not enough evidence, I'm sorry.
The district attorneys, they're not going to waste the time of a court if there's nothing there.
Yeah.
We're not going to do it. And so that is going to help their conviction rates by not trying cases.
Right.
I feel like the memo was kind of negging the police department, really. It was kind of close.
There's that word again.
Yeah, we're just going to put that in our vocabulary now.
Yeah. But what do you think about her decision to, like, go on her own? I mean, I guess it...
I think it's commendable.
It is commendable, but is it... It's like just kind of scraping the surface, isn't it?
That's like me taking a master class with Steve Martin and saying I'm a comedian. Like, come on. Like,
oh, but you
I did what? I did what? We did in college. You have 16 weeks of accounting. Could I recall any of that? No.
But it's not her end all be all. It's not the only thing that she's studied outside of her original academy. I think that it's just one of the factors that she's sort of...
True.
But in this country where people don't like to pay taxes very much, the law enforcement officers and teachers are always given lower salaries, and there's not additional money for additional training.
That's
so
true.
What she said about going, you know, her training not ending after the academy, the people who she works for know what she's doing. They're not willing to foot the bill for this additional training. I'll bet you that this course would be a course they would love to provide their officers, but they don't have the budget to do it. So it is these officers' choice to spend the money on their own. They probably don't even earn that much either.
And that's genuinely very commendable. However, it still doesn't mean that with that training, it's then valid for police interrogations or investigations.
Especially when she just learned it.
Yes.
We don't know when she learned it.
In her hands. You can't base it on an 8-hour course.
But I don't know if she's used it in other cases within that police department. I don't know if there are other officers with that training that can cross-reference it.
We also don't know what percentage of her conclusion was based on that specific technique. It could have been 2%. It could have been half of a percent, or it could have been the majority. How do we know?
I mean, it's like I would trust a lie detector, actual machine, which seems to be relatively proven technology.
No, they're not.
Well, they're pretty. They're more accurate than not.
But not allowed in court.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Is that so? Why would this woman who's taken an 8-hour course
be more than that?
I don't know. It seems like it would be even less admissible.
Yeah. I agree.
You know.
If you're listening to Deliberations, you probably have a love for crime podcasts just like me. Let me tell you about a serialized true crime podcast I love called Vanished, the Tara Calico Investigation. Tara Calico disappeared on September 20th. 1988, a mile and a half from her home in Belen, New Mexico, while on her 34-mile bike ride. 9 months after her disappearance, a photo of a young boy and teenage girl bound and gagged in the back of a van was found in a convenience store parking lot in Port St. Joe, Florida. The girl was immediately believed to be Tara Calico, throwing her case into the national spotlight for the next 8 years, also known as the Polaroid crime. Then suddenly her case went cold. It wasn't until 2008 when Valencia County Sheriff Rene Rivera stated in an interview for the local paper that he knew the boys, now men, that committed the crime and the parents who helped cover it up. This admission ignited Melinda Esquibel, host of Vanished and friend to Tara Calico, on an 8-year journey to uncover what happened to her high school schoolmate. Melinda has been the only person granted exclusive access to her case by the Valencia County Sheriff's Office. Hailed by Investigation Discovery magazine as one of their top 10 unsolved cases, Vanished journeys Tara Calico's case file and reveals shocking, never-before-heard interviews, statements, and information, including the Los Alamos Labs analysis done on the Polaroid photo found in Florida. To follow this fascinating serialized podcast, visit iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite podcast directory and search for Vanished, the Tara Calico Investigation. Again, that's Vanished, the Tara Calico Investigation. The concept of confirmation bias played a major role in the defense of Keith Montgomery, as did the science of statement analysis. In a trial of he said, she said, Onlookers have begun asking the question, can this science really determine a lie from the truth? Next time on Deliberations.
Can reasonable doubt be overcome by one person's testimony?
Linguistic clues will give a person away if they're being deceptive.
I'm skeptical of any new science entering a court of law.
Deliberations is created, written, produced, directed, and edited by me, Chelsea Cox, and it proudly airs as part of the Audio Boom Network. Today's cast: Jury, Lindsay Purcell, Lindsay Fishkin, Lindsay Mallard, Ross Denyer, Kevin Bryan, and Drew Phillips. Courtroom: Alyssa Ariel Perez, Laura Meadows, Lindsay Rousseau, Jonathan Zeiger, Tracy Landecker, and Molly Wheaton. Editorial advisement by Jessa Nicholson Getz from the HID podcast Getting Off. If you know anything about or are interested in statement analysis, we're about to dig in, so check out my Facebook page at Deliberations Pod, where I'll be posting some info. And as always, feel free to share your thoughts there or in the Deliberations Room Facebook group. We'll see you next week.